Well, Eric Hamelback is with me now. I told you he is the CEO of the National HBPA and an organization that represents horsemen and isn't as high on the legislation that you heard Congressman Andy Barr discuss in the previous segment. Eric, first of all, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning. I'm happy to be on. And how are you doing? Everything's good, I hope.
Yeah, everything's good. Just had a visit with Congressman Andy Barr, as I mentioned, and he laid out some of the particulars of this piece of legislation that has been introduced. And as I talked about, there are people that will be pro-legislation. There will be people that will be against this type of legislation. And I guess that's the side of the fence that you fall on.
Sure. I would first say that I think it's important for everyone to note that we appreciated Senator McConnell looking at the past Horse Racing Integrity Acts and really realizing that, you know, they weren't sufficient, making some changes that many of us, including the National HBPA, myself, feel like are positive changes within the new legislation. But the reality comes back to the fact that the main opposition points that have continued to bother us with the legislation remained in Senator McConnell's new bill. And so while we do feel like there are definite positives within the bill, there are still issues that I think are concerning. And for us, we certainly feel as if can't move forward without some further questions answered.
What are some of those specifically, Eric? What are some of those issues that don't set well with you and with the HBPA?
Sure. I think it's been widely known that the National HBPA and honestly many horsemen and horsemen's groups have continued to stand with veterinary leadership when LASIX is an issue. And again, you don't hear the AAEP or even the AVMA being involved with the legislation's makeup. It has some new wording, yes. It talks about having a study done, but what it doesn't talk about is it being peer-reviewed. And quite honestly, the points that the bill has with regards to the authority making changes are pretty vague to some extent, but also would be difficult to accomplish. So, you know, for us, again, health and welfare of the equine athlete and ultimately the humans that are riding them, we feel as if this sort of ban on LASIX without a study prior to is concerning. So that's going to still be an issue with us, and the fact that, again, veterinary leadership really needs to be involved in putting this type of thing together. We shouldn't let policy be driven by politics, right? We're hearing that over and over with the COVID pandemic, and we continue to hear from the media, don't let politics drive policy, let science drive policy. And that's exactly what this bill does not do. So again, if we wanted to do this correctly, if we wanted to do any changes based off of peer-reviewed science, I think that would certainly be better than what we have with this bill. One of points, Mike, is, and always has been, the most concerning for me, and it's the economics. It's the lack of a funding mechanism that this bill continues to not have. I think that when I look back on the 5 years that we've been looking and discussing this legislation, before I was even with the National HBPA, when I was on the Board of Trustees at TOBA, my concern was the economics, to the point where we asked Congressman Barr and Congressman Tonko for an economic impact study or some sort of understanding of what it's going to cost us, where's the money going to come from. Right now, I think this bill continues to allow the authority to levy millions of dollars on the fees or with fees and lay it on the backs of horsemen that are in the industry. And that is a concern because we don't know where the money's going to come from. So if I have to say my most concerning point is and really always has been, it's the economics of this. I mean, the reality, Mike, is that nobody has really proven that this is good for the industry, right? We've continued to push this legislation forward based around speculation, certainly not facts. The ones who continue to say that the industry is rampant with drugs and cheating, again, the facts aren't there. Could we do more? Absolutely. But when you look at the fact of what this could do to the industry, nobody's really looked at it. And I've continued to try to say, when you talk about the economics and how this is going to affect the industry and how this is going to affect horse players, ultimately our industry is driven by wagering, period. And there's no other way to say it. If we don't have owners and if we don't have horse players, we don't have an industry. So where is their voice? Where is the proof that this is good for the industry? And that's something that we continue to try to say. And you know, we continue to be called obstructionists. I like to try to say that I'm trying to educate folks into the details. Because at the end of the day, very few people have really studied the legislation well enough to argue the points. You know me, I'm not an attorney. I'm just out looking for the best in the best interest of horsemen, and that's what I want to continue to try to do.
Yeah, and Eric, you know, there are pros and cons. This bill is not necessarily
Absolutely.
Perfect, and nobody would ever say that it is, but as you said, there are some good elements to it, and I started the show by talking about the fact that, look, you can't dodge this. We are a very fragmented industry. 38 separate racing jurisdictions, each with their own set of rules and regulations, makes it so hard on horsemen to know what they're doing with withdrawal times and what the rules are in each state, and that's not good. We need to get that under control, but without a quote-unquote commissioner or league office, we don't even have a league, so you can't even go down that road. But I guess my question to you, and it's the same question that I asked Congressman Barr in the previous segment, why has the horse industry been unable to find a way to do this on its own for so long?
So, Mike, let's go back a little bit. First off, and I hope your listeners will take this piece of advice. We continue to hear the rhetoric of 38 individual jurisdictions. Okay, if I can do nothing else, please go to the RMTC website and first look at the fact that we only govern 34 paramutual jurisdictions. Okay, there are some jurisdictions that have licenses that we're not in there. And next, at the RMTC website, look at the fact that the controlled therapeutic substance list, the legal medications in this industry, 95% of the paramutual handle that's bet in the United States is under the exact same controlled therapeutic substance list. So if we really want to define uniformity, or as they continue to clamor, the lack of uniformity, let's look at how much uniformity there actually is. Okay, I always say we don't even get credit for what uniformity is out there. Okay, yes. There are some differences in withdrawal times, but the reality is if a medication's not on that controlled therapeutic substance list in any jurisdiction, it's illegal. You know, it isn't that you can run in Indiana on something that's not on the CTS and then not run on it in Kentucky. So once again, defining uniformity, I think, is very much a part of this discussion that always continues to get overlooked within the active 34 jurisdictions. So I would say in my research and getting the University of Arizona and the University of Louisville's help, we've looked at what differences there are in the model rules with regard to medication. And again, remember, this bill, for the most part, outside of some track safety now, it's going to only deal with medication. And I truly believe that there is more uniformity than people even give us credit for that are trying to push this bill forward. And certainly those who are in D.C. that are outside the weeds of our industry don't understand what uniformity we have. So again, I come back to that statement. I'm trying to educate those on what we have and, you know, how many people actually realize that in 2019, the ARCI, our current anti-doping program, we conducted close to 264,000 biological samples in horse racing, all three breeds, 99.45% came back violation free. Right? So The facts I still try to educate folks on, try to get people to realize that while you do hear the negative, you do hear media talk about the indictments, you do hear media talk about the horrific tragedies that occurred at Santa Anita, nobody's pushing out the good parts of the statistics that are really there.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I've said that a long time, Eric, and you and I have talked about it privately.
Yes,
there are
absolutely.
The vast majority, and I don't even want to put a percentage to it, but I'm sure it's well in excess of 95% of the people that are involved in this sport are doing it the right way, playing by the rules. And yes, you
absolutely.
Always hear the negatives, but it's like that in every sport. It's like that in every industry. Those are the things that are going to sell newspapers and get people to go online to read articles. If you come out with positive things, nobody wants to go read about that. But God, you come out with a controversy or something that's not, that's not the norm, and all of a sudden everybody's flocking there to do it. So yeah,
exactly.
I get it. I understand that point completely.
Yeah.
I'm coming up to a commercial break here in just a second, but you mentioned that there are some positives to this legislation. So in about 30 seconds or less, give me the one thing that you think is the best part about this particular piece of legislation.
Well, it's the addition of the track safety. I think there are more than that, but track safety is something that we've been discussing and advocating for quite some time. We were the only organization that truly called out for an independent investigation of the racing surface at Santa Anita. I mean, for us, that was paramount. We saw it. We recognized what happened and what was a very positive thing in Aqueduct. We weren't involved, but an independent independent group got together and evaluated the surface and the instance and what happened there in New York. That should have been done in Santa Anita, or if nothing else, use the roadmap that was created by that group. So for me, anything revolving around increased safety and accreditation of racetracks is very much a positive.
All right, Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Eric, listen, appreciate the visit. I know you've got other things going on this morning, so go enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure to be on, and appreciate you getting the message out there.